yourself a song to sing, and sing it till you're done. Yes, yeah, sing it hard and sing it well. Send the robber barons straight to hell. The greedy thieves who came around and ate the flesh of everything they found. Whose crimes have gone unpunished now. Walk the streets a screaming now. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. Today, what we're going to do is talk about Greece one more time. It's almost impossible not to do that. This weekend is the absolute deadline date between last March 1st and June 30th. June 30th, next Tuesday, is the deadline date for the Greeks to come up and make the payments to the Troika. That's the ECB, European Central Bank, the European Commission, finance ministers of the European Eurozone countries, and the IMF, International Monetary Fund. So June 30th is the deadline date. They extended the agreement on March 1st for four more months to see if they could come to terms on rewriting the old debt agreements that were established in 2012, and before that in 2010. So they're at the 11th hour now, and we'll see what happens. In fact, as this show airs on Saturday the 27th, Greece and the Troika are negotiating in Brussels over the weekend. Now, why is this important? Because no one knows what the contagion effects are going to be on the European banking system, and therefore the global banking system, on European stock and bond markets, and therefore global stock and bond markets, if Greece defaults and then exits. The potential impact, of course, is much greater for a Greek exit than a default. Default simply means that you fail to pay your principal and interest on the debt that's due. And, of course, it's all due on June 30th. Now, I've been saying all along that June 30th is not the real drop-dead date, that there are ways for both sides to continue negotiating, and that will most likely be the case. I say most likely because we're in a territory of unpredictability here, being so close to the deadline date, and we will see what happens on June 30th here. In fact, we may see an indication of 30th on Monday, June 29th, after this weekend, because if they don't reach agreement this weekend, most likely they won't do it on Monday on the 11th hour either, although there's a slight possibility they could if they were close enough. So the contagion potential is really significant here, and no one really knows. It's new territory. On the other hand, the Troika, which are really, the governmental finance representatives of the European banking and bankers, banking system and bankers and shadow bankers and big investors, money investors, what I call the finance capital elite. That's who these institutions are representing. Total Greek debt is about $350 billion that's been built up over time. And I talked in a previous show about this, the origins of this debt, which really can be laid on the doorstep of German and Northern European businesses and bankers. That's where it really all begins. If you're interested in that, go back and listen to my earlier shows this month. This is the third show on Greece this month, and we talked about the origins of the Greek debt earlier this month, and then we talked last show about events of the last couple weeks where things have begun to intensify. Greek debt intensifies. So you might want to go back and listen to those shows if you're really interested in what I have to say today as a prelude to better understanding what we're going to be talking about today with regard to Greece. Especially last week, the show did not get posted, downloaded immediately on Saturday, and it took a couple days, so folks who may have been trying to access that podcast and archive of last week. May not have been able to get to it until the middle of this past week. So just a suggestion if you want more context. And also, I've been having shows on this earlier in the year when it looked like, when Syriza got elected, that's the party, dominant party in Greek parliament, and they extended the agreement on February 28th. It was really expiring then. They extended it for the 4 months. I made some comments on that and had a show on that, and then also had another show on how these Greek negotiations are really kind of like labor management negotiations writ large on a grand political level, because these are really class forces in contention here, very clearly. And now we can see it, how much this is a class negotiations in the final positions of the parties. What has it really, you know, boiled down to at the very last minute here? It's not simply about debt, you see. It's about how you're going to pay for this debt, how the Troika is demanding that Greece pay for it. And the Troika is fairly committed, I think, for extending it and providing some leeway to Greece with regard to the time limits and the extension of the debt. You know, whether it's going to be extended out longer or interim adjustments to the surplus in Greece and so forth. The parties are pretty close on what the surplus must be from the Greeks to start using to pay the debt. In the past, the surplus, in the past terms and conditions, that surplus, the Troika has insisted, must be 3.5%. In other words, the Greeks must generate 3.5% of a surplus in their GDP in order to pay, make the payments on the debt that come due. If they didn't have a surplus, they couldn't, there would be no funds to pay the debt down. So the surplus has been an issue. Greeks have said, in their positions in the last 4 months, so no, we only want to generate a 1% or less surplus so we can use the rest of our actual surplus to spend it to try to generate a Greek economic recovery. In other words, the position has been, the Greeks, we need to grow out of this debt, because just squeezing, cutting wages and benefits and services and so forth will leave us in the same position as we've been for 7 years now, depression. Somehow an re-agreement has to be made, the Greeks argue, so that we have more money to engage in the right kind of government spending and investment that will raise incomes, that will raise GDP, and grow the surplus. We need to grow that surplus in order to make those payments. So that's been the Greek position. Grow out of the debt. Let us keep a better surplus. That means let us spend more to stimulate the economy and therefore a smaller surplus to pay the debt with. Conversely, the Troika says, no, we don't want you to do that kind of spending. We just want you to squeeze the lemon over there and figure out how you're going to pay us, which means cut more. Cut more spending, raise more taxes, and so forth, and squeeze, get their pound of flesh out of the Greek economy. They don't care really what's going on there, as long as they get their pound of flesh, pay us back. That's bankers, of course. That's some bankers don't care if your company goes under. Bankers don't care if you lose your house. You know, they just want their money. They're not going to work with you because it creates a precedent in their view and encourages others not to pay on time. So that's the most important thing to bankers here. And the Troikers are the bankers. You know, when this debt originated and the first crisis occurred in 2010 in Greece, debt crisis, $250 billion of the debt was owed to private investors, $250 billion. And, of course, when you had the crash, all the economies, including Greece, could not generate the surplus and GDP because of the recession of 2008-09 to pay make the payments. So what did they do? What did the Troika do? The Troika loaned them even more money to make the payments. We'll give you more money, put you more in debt, and pay more interest for a longer term just to pay off the interest we've already loaned you. You know, that's the whole strategy. Once they get you locked into that, boy, they got you, you know. So they, in 2010, the private sector had owed $250 billion in Greek debt. But in 2012, when the European economies collapsed again into a double-dip recession again, Greece could not even pay again. And that meant the Troika stepped in for a third time, and the Troika loaned even more money to Greece to pay the past debt. But since the past debt was mostly private debt, you know, hedge funds, equity funds, so forth, part of the terms and conditions of the European governments, the IMF, ECB, and so forth, of loaning more money to Greece in 2012 was that they would pay back the private debt holders and get them out of the picture. And that's exactly what they did. They bailed out the private shadow bankers in the 2012 further debt extension. So today what we got is $350 billion in Greek debt, which is owed almost totally, 80-some percent of it's owed to these government agencies, the Troika, the ECB, the IMF, the European Commission's government bailout funds. The private debt is holders, you know, somewhere around 30, 35 billion out of 350 billion. You know, they're out of the picture. They got bailed and they said, okay, you know, we, your government representatives here, we, these government agencies, we'll now deal with Greece and try to get our money back down the road, you see. So that's a little bit of a repeat of the history. Go back to my June 3rd show if you want a little more in depth on how that all worked and got and originated. But anyway, the dealing now is totally almost with the governments, these three that we call the Troika. Now, what's happening in recent weeks is that the Troika has been turning the screws on Greece, you know, turning up the heat. On Greece, demanding more and more in terms of concessions before they renegotiate the loan. You know, the 270 some billion that's coming due right now. Turning up the screws on Greece, turning up the pressure. The Troika have been negotiating very hardball from the very beginning. These are very experienced negotiators. You know, on the management side of the labor-capital relationship, right? These are the political managers for the big bankers and investors. You know, just like in a company, you have the CEO and so forth. They're the economic managers on behalf of the investors in their company. This is like labor management writ large, and I'll explain why I think that is so. It's a very class-oriented negotiations going on. But now you got political institutions representing capital rather than, you know, hired CEOs and management as in a corporation. They've been turning up the screws on the Greeks. You know, the Greeks have been trying desperately to find some way to accommodate them to get the negotiations going forward. They've been acting in good faith, i.e. Syriza, the Greeks, thinking that if they made concessions, counter-concessions would follow. Well, you're dealing with some Sharpie negotiators here, you know, in the IMF and so forth. They're the best of their class. That's why they're there, you see, and there's trillions of dollars involved, and that's why they're there, right? Bankers aren't pushovers when it comes to bargaining. They know how to get their pound of flesh. They do it all the time. Lots of practice, you see. And Syriza and its government representatives are new at this thing, you know. And they think, well, you know, everyone wants to save the euro, European experience and potential. Therefore, we will all compromise. No, that's not how bargaining goes, especially especially when the other side feels they got the upper hand. You know, they will play hard nose. They'll say, okay, we'll take those concessions. Now, how about some more before we respond? And that's exactly what the Troika's been doing, exactly. Pushing Greece to make concessions and then saying, nope, not enough. We need more. And waiting to the very, very 11th hour, which we are at now. This is finally the 11th hour before the Troika, comes up with any kind of token concessions. You see, they feel the momentum is in their favor now over the past month, that the Greeks have been softened up and the Greeks have made concession after concession. Well, let's just keep them going in that direction. You know, our hardball strategy, we the Troika, has now produced results. The Greeks, are finally softening up, so hardball should continue, right? That's the logic of their thinking in this regard. It's working. It's working for them. We'll shortly explain some of the concessions the Greeks have made, but the response of the Troika up to now, the hour, is, okay, good, we'll take that more. In fact, the Troika isn't even abiding by its past agreement that was extended on February 28th. Under that past agreement, the Troika was supposed to release $7.2 billion in further loans to the Greeks. That was under the 2012 agreement. But even though they extended it in full, that 2012 agreement, they withheld that money. You see, because they want to really squeeze Greece. If they had given them the loans, the Greeks wouldn't be so much behind the eight ball. They would be as amenable to make concessions. So we're not going to give them that money, which they haven't. And then there's another pot of money of several trillion dollars that was due to the Greeks from Greek bonds held by the European Central Bank. Interest on those bonds, $2-3 billion. Well, they're sitting on that too. So there's about 10 billion euros there that should have been provided to Greece during this four-month period, but hasn't. So, you know, it's really ironic. The Troika beats up Greece and says, you're not abiding by the old agreement. Well, at the same time, they're the ones who aren't abiding by the old agreement. Okay. So, you know, we're now at the 11th session. There have been several meetings, high-level meetings, all during the week. Each one has produced very little in terms of concessions. And to understand where negotiations have gone over the past week, you have to look at the proposals that the Greeks put on the table themselves last Monday, June 23rd, and that they expected some response from the Troika on at least by Wednesday. And the Troika came back and said, this is not credible. Credible is the term they use, credible. Meaning you didn't go far enough on what we really wanted. Okay, you made some concessions, but, you know, we're not impressed with those. We really want the following concessions. So that was the response the Troika threw in the face of the Greek negotiators. Now the Greek negotiators are very high level. You know, this is Alexander Tsipras, the president, who's negotiating at one level, the finance minister, Yanis Varoufakis, who, by the way, has been sidelined somewhat in a tactical move by the Troika that has succeeded, others, high-level people in the Greek government are involved working out details in Brussels and so forth, right? On Wednesday, they just threw it back in the Greeks' face. And then there was a Thursday meeting that was supposed to break through the logjam here with Tsipras meeting with the government officials, Angela Merkel, right, and François Hollande of France, right? These are their finance ministers. Well, at least France's, because the German finance minister, Wolfgang Schäuble, is a real hardliner. Schäuble wants to push Greece to the brink. Schäuble wants Greece to pretty much roll over the old agreement and accept it again, right? Or, as he's saying, maybe they should leave the Eurozone, right? Sort of taunting them. Go ahead, leave if you want, right? And it's interesting because in the interim, pressure is being built by the Troika, European businesses within Greece, right? They're beginning to leverage some of their contacts within Greece to put pressure on the Greek parliament that has a coalition that is led by Syriza, right? We saw this, for example, with the defection of the Greek central bank itself was supposed to be subject to the direction of the government, but the central bank chairman there in Greece came out on the side of the Troika and said, oh, we should accept this as is. Yeah. So, you know, you can see these pressures building in the background as a backstory kind of a strategy by the Troika in European business to squeeze Syriza. And as I've said in previous shows and in some published articles recently, the ultimate of this plan B by the Troika, which is really being driven by Wolfgang Schäuble, the Germans, with friends in Holland and Eastern Europe and Spain government. What they're doing is kind of pushing Greece to the brink on the default. And the real ultimate objective of their plan B may be to force a regime change in Greece. You know, you can imagine a very feasible, credible scenario here where they push Greece to the brink, require unacceptable concessions. That's plan A. Extend, what we got now as is with all the continued concessions, and then some, by the way. Plan B is, okay, you don't want to accept the concessions. The Troika's plan B is we're going to push you to default. And if you don't collapse soon as default happens, well, then we will make sure that there's economic blood on the ground in Greece, enough discontent, let the banking system collapse there, let the capital of, money, let the rich folks send their money out and cause a deep crisis in Greece, force a confidence vote of the Syriza government and have quick re-elections and then make sure that these smaller parties amenable to the Troika position, i.e. the business interests, make sure these smaller parties now form a new coalition government with the small business elements within Syriza. What else? The other parties, to the river and New Democracy. These are names of these other fringe parties. And put together a new coalition government that's more amenable to extending the deficit and extending the debts, you see. And in the meantime, Greek public opinion will be so hammered by the ever-deepening crisis, even worse than it is today, that they will either become totally disillusioned, disenchanted of all political parties, in other words, turn the field over to the capitalist parties, or they will be willing to agree to anything to stop the crisis. That now has gotten worse over the next 90 days, you see. That's a very credible scenario, very credible. And it's probably, their ultimate scenario. They, the Troika, would like to have just another plan A, right, with a few little sweeteners maybe to the Greeks. What would the sweeteners be? We'll extend this thing for 90 days, or there's some talk about extending till November. And in the meantime, we'll release the 7.5 billion euros that we were supposed to release to you before. Of course, you're not going to get that, Greece, because that's going to go right back to us to pay the debt that's due about that amount here in July 20th, right? So, we'll release it. In other words, we'll release it to ourselves is what they'll do, And then we'll have the European Central Bank pay you your couple billion on interest that was due that we didn't pay you before, but that will be used as well to pay for the debt payments between now and November. Then we'll look at the whole situation after public opinion and the party regime change has occurred. Public opinion has been tamed over the next 4 or 5 months. And then we'll renegotiate this thing all over again with you guys. And you'll be in a much weaker position, Greece. Syriza, if it exists, will be just a reflection of what it once was independently. And the left parties and center parties that have gotten together to form this government will be fractured, fragmented, and dispersed. And the Troika, will be in the driver's seat once again. That's very likely what could happen here. So plan A would be we will allow a 3-4 month, 4 or 5 month maybe extension here, and we'll release funds to pay ourselves what you owe us, and then everything goes on the same it was after everybody is discouraged, tamed, and marginalized and fragmented politically over there. Regime change looks very, very attractive to the Schäubles and all these other folks up there. Let's get rid of this left wing annoyance down there in Greece. Because if we don't get rid of it, there's always the possibility that if Greece is successful, if Syriza is successful, it certainly will provoke interests in Spain and Podemos. There's very similar kind of independent party arising there, and in other places there's independent parties arising as well. Another political problem is if Greece somehow is able to force changes on us, the Troika. Right. That might give encouragement to other countries, like in the UK and Holland and so forth, where we have these movements now and nascent parties that are saying, let's break from the Eurozone and the European Union. It's not worth the cost, right? And then, of course, you have a big problem there in France with the National Front, right wing in this case, is pretty much saying the same thing. They have to tame Greece politically. They have to tame it. They have to try to destroy Syriza if they can in the process as an example to the rest of Europe. And so there's big stakes here. And as I've been saying all along, there's also big stakes in that, what we got going on here is real class interests in Europe. In Europe today, the number one strategy for economic recovery is a combination of quantitative easing, monetary injection to drive the currency down, drive the euro down in global markets, make it cheap. If you do that, then European exports become much more competitive. And the idea is to grow the European economy by stimulating exports to the rest of the world. And, of course, that will stimulate the domestic production and so forth. And, that's what they see as the way of getting out of the recession, which is just, they're in and out. They're in and out, for the last 7 years in Europe. There's been even less recovery in Europe, sustained recovery, than there has been in the United States for the last 7 years. This recovery by competitive devaluation, by driving down the currency, is key here. It's key. Now, the corollary to that key is, if you're going to drive down the currency, make your exports more competitive by driving down the currency by means of quantitative easing, then we should be doing this as well by driving down wages and wage costs by what's called internal devaluations. In other words, you drive down your wage costs, you're going to make your goods less expensive as well, just as driving down the currency makes the goods less expensive. So throughout Europe, there's this movement for labor market reforms. Labor market reforms are really about holding the lid and reducing wage costs in Europe. It comes in a number of forms. You know, don't raise the minimum wage is one. Cut pensions is another. Hire more part-time workers is another. There's a whole raft of reduce collective bargaining. Put limits on strikes. This is true everywhere in Europe going on right now. Spain has done it first, and Spain has boosted its exports. So it's like the poster child here for this strategy of labor market reforms. Italy is starting to do it as well. You know, to do this, you've got to get these compliant social democratic liberal leaders in, like Renzi in Italy, right, and Hollande in France, right? The right winger, conservative, pro corporate, openly cannot do it as easily as getting the European Obamas, you might say, to do it for them, and that's exactly what's happened here. So there's this big push for labor market reforms throughout Europe, which is wage and pension and other cost reductions. I mean, pensions are what? Look, pensions are just deferred wages. So if you cut pensions, you're cutting wages, right? When workers negotiate and get a pension increase, what they're doing is giving up a pension contribution increase by their employer. They're giving up what they would have gotten in wages, direct wages. They're saying, okay, instead of giving us a wage increase, put this money into our pensions, deferred wages that we'll claim when we get there to the retirement, retirement to crossing line or whatever. Right. You got to think of this cutting of pensions as cutting of wages in the deferred sense. The same thing with cutting health care benefits. Right. Or by making workers pay more for health care, which is what Obamacare is all about. That's a kind of a wage cut as well. Deferred wages in the forms of benefit compensation is really the focus, because they've got the nominal wages totally under control everywhere. Nominal wages are not rising anywhere. You either got to work longer or borrow more money, i.e. debt, if you want to continue your standard of living. Right? So if they let Greece get by without imposing the same labor market reform demands on Greece, if Greece resists it, then it makes their whole strategy elsewhere in Europe more difficult, right? It's a green light that, the political economic interests here that run Europe are going to back off, right? They're not really totally serious about it. It will give the movements against labor market reforms in Italy, France, and elsewhere much more confidence to resist. So they got to let, they can't open that window in little old Greece, and that's why they're playing hardball on these issues in Greece. Okay. For example, let's look at what the proposals have been at the beginning of the week, as I said, from Greece, and then look at the latest proposals that were issued just a day ago by the Troika themselves. By the way, there is a series of articles in the UK Guardian newspaper where they show the exact language of the Greek proposals. It's an 11-page document. And then it shows the Troika's response. In other words, what they crossed out from the Greek proposals, totally rejected, and then what they added in the Troika, their own additional responses to the initial Greek proposals, right? They've even done it in red line. In other words, the new Troika proposals are in red, and where they cross out the Greek proposals are a red line, and the original Greek proposals of last week are there in black and white, well, black print. So if you want to look at it, see if you can, Google it, look it up in the UK Guardian newspaper in the United Kingdom. And this is the document that they're talking about this weekend. You know, these are the most recent positions, the Greek positions and the Troika responses to them. It's going to be interesting to to see by Monday to what extent they've adjusted any of this stuff even further. Right? My guess, and it's just a guess, is that the Greeks will make still further concessions than they have already. In other words, they will respond in some ways to the additional request in red of the Troika, and that will constitute additional concessions. And you know, the big concessions that the Troika really wants are in the area of pensions and taxes. Oh, this is what I mean by the class character here of these negotiations. You know, the value-added tax, which is the sales tax in Europe and Greece, the main tax that's used to raise revenues, right? The Greeks had proposed at the beginning of the week to raise it to a roughly three-quarters of 1% of their GDP. Okay, so what is the GDP in Greece? That's about $180 billion. Okay, that's all, $180 billion. So three quarters of 1% of that, you know, would be roughly $1.5 billion, I guess, right? So roughly. So, you know, the Greeks had proposed, we'll raise the value-added tax $1.5 billion. It meant that, we will maintain the standard 23% VAT, value-added tax, sales tax rate, but we want a break for food, basic food tax, in other words, 13% instead of 23%, and only 6% tax for medical supplies, restaurants, which are a major business in Greece because it's heavily tourist, theater and college textbooks and stuff like that. Okay, so like a three-tier. And there are some that are even exempted from the value-added tax, like the tax isn't charged, I believe, on those parts of Greece that are the islands where you're heavily tourist-oriented. Okay, you know, the Greeks said, okay, we'll buy the 23% you are talking about, you Troika, that you want. But we need some special, you know, exceptions and exemptions that I just described. Well, you know, Troika has come back in their response and said, nope. They totally crossed out red line, that three quarters of 1%, or $1.5 billion. You know, they demanded an increase in that amount, right? A significant increase. In other words, we want you to remove the exemptions. We want you to make the islands pay, you know, the 23%. You know, we don't want that reduced 13% rate on all food, just on unprocessed food, you know. So if you cook it in a restaurant, it's processed, you see. So it's 23% tax. Any of you planning to go to Greece, you know, next year or something, you know, you'll pay a 23% VAT tax on whatever you eat at a restaurant there. Okay, so it's a very class-oriented. In other words, who pays the sales tax? It's the working poor. Workers and working poor pay more of their income in the sales tax. It's a very regressive tax, as we call it, right? And what Syriza has been demanding all along is a series of taxes on the rich, on the wealthy, on the corporations, because they're the ones who have been avoiding fraud and so forth, avoiding the tax payments all along. You know, they wanted, Syriza wanted to raise the income tax payments from between 1% to 3% more, right? They wanted tax. They wanted a luxury tax, a luxury yacht tax. You know, a lot of rich Europeans have the yachts there in the Aegean and Mediterranean. So there was a yacht tax. There was an excess profits tax Syriza had proposed of 12% on all incomes of businesses earned above 500,000 euros. Right, raised the corporate tax rate from current 26 to 29%, okay, And in doing so, you know, raise billions of dollars every year by raising taxes on the rich. Well, Troika said, no, no, no. We don't want any of that. I mean, those are our cousins down there, right? We don't want to tax the rich. Raise the sales tax on everybody else, right? So you can see the very class-oriented basis of the different contending tax proposals here between, you know, Syriza and the Troika. Troika reveals its true interest, you see. What about pensions? Well, it's the same thing. By the way, Greek pensions are so low, 50% of everybody on a Greek pension is living in poverty in Greece. Yeah, that's how low it is, right? And it's been significantly cut. I mean, it is so low because ever since 2010, pension payments have been cut. And the Syriza, you know, has restored some of those pension cuts at the very, very low end, right, for the poorest people on pensions, right? Syriza, by the way, has conceded that, okay, you know, we will be glad to raise the early retirement age that people can claim pensions on a kind of a step basis between now and, you know, over the next 10 years, and we'll even agree to raise the regular retirement age over the next 10 years. But the Troika says, no, no, we want to do that all at once, you see, right? And especially we want you to roll back the rollbacks you did already on pensions on the poor, right? They really don't care. And Greece was saying, we'll make these pension adjustments, our concessions, on November 1st of this year. And Troika says, no, make it right now, July 1st, right? We want the full implementation of the 2010 pension terms and conditions, right? Back to 2010. You got to continue that and implement that immediately, right? And they also want changes to some concessions the Troika made regarding lump sum pension payments in 2012 when the debt was renegotiated. And they said, quote, further steps to improve pensions. In other words, so, you know, we're gonna ask for even more pension rollbacks here. So you see, once again, pensions as a kind of deferred wage is really a very class-based attack on Greece. And it's not really a question of the surplus because, you know, both parties are fairly close on surplus. The Troika have made concessions on the surplus. Okay, they're both around 1%. In other words, generate 1% surplus in this next 2015. You know, Greece isn't going to even have a 1% surplus in 2015 because all of this has thrown their economy back into recession, right? And they still got 25% unemployment there. So, you know, they're giving up actually nothing in that regard. And, of course, the Troika, want the 3.5% surplus here occurring in, I think it's 2017-18, whereas Greece wants to more slowly raise the surplus. But as I said before, the issue is not the surplus. The issue is the content of the cuts. Troika wants spending cuts, particularly wage and benefit spending cuts. They want the full implementation of the privatization plans that they've had before. Syriza and the Greeks have said, well, okay, we'll go ahead with certain privatizations, but not those that will end up in raising prices and costs, you know, for electricity and basic utilities and so forth for the average Greeks, because, you know, then we're reducing income even more, and even more we can't get spending going and income going to get out of this depression. Once again, if you look at the pension, if you look at the privatization, if you look at the tax difference in the tax proposals, you see very clearly the class nature of these negotiations. Now, I want to conclude with talking a little bit about bargaining. You know, yours truly, I've been in dozens of bargaining in my previous years as a union elected union local union official, dozens. I've seen the tactics and the strategies, and it's really interesting to watch all this unveil in Greece because it's very much similar. You know, I mean, not all negotiations are the same. In business, you know, you may negotiate a partnership agreement, or you may negotiate an acquisition, and so forth. You know, and you know, some of the procedures, strategies, tactics are the same, but some of them, they're really quite different than labor negotiations. This is not a business negotiation. This is a labor contract negotiation at a very high political level. Now, a couple points on the nature of these negotiations themselves. First of all, they are very class-oriented, as I've said, the nature of the demands. Pensions, especially, you know, on the poor and working class, taxes, again, on workers, retired workers, not the rich, right? Converting public goods to private companies for profit, exploitation, so that, so forth. So that's one of the characteristics of this negotiation. But the other is, I think Syriza, you know, with all due respect for him, I wish him all the best of luck, and I'm really pro Syriza on this whole event, but they made some serious bargaining errors, negotiating errors. Okay, what are these? First of all, they did not use the last 4 months to develop their own plan B, right? The Troika has, but they haven't. What would that have been? Well, I talked before. It would have had the center around setting up their own parallel currency, called it a new drachma, or whatever you want to call it, they should have been setting that up for implementation if worse came to worse. That would have been a real signal to the Troika. Look, you know, we're not fooling around here either, right? And they should have really attempted to secure alternative financing as necessary, you know, from Russia, from China, and so forth. They waited to the last minute, you know, last week. Tsipras, you know, went to St. Petersburg and talked to Putin and so forth. I don't know if there's been discussions with the Chinese, but the Chinese have bid on purchasing the port there in Athens, Piraeus port. So there are business contacts there. But, you know, just having done that would have given the signal to the Troika negotiators that, look, we're serious about this too. Right. Second error, thinking that government figures like Angela Merkel and Francois Hollande could intercede with the Euro bankers and their finance ministers to get a better deal. This has been a strategy all along by the Syriza negotiators, thinking that the European Commission would be less hardball. You know, Jean-Claude Juncker also, you know, was somebody they thought they could intercede with, right? Donald Tusk of the European Commission. But, you know, this the Troika has just been playing hard cop, soft cop here. You know, Schäuble and the finance ministers, hard cops, and then Merkel and Holland, you know, soft cops. And we see that now in the last few days where Merkel and Holland have come out and pretty much said, look, Syriza, Tsipras, you better accept this deal, right? A third error has been making concessions before the 11th hour. They should not, the Greeks should not have made the concessions they had last Monday and before that. They should have waited to the 11th hour to make those concessions. If the other side was playing hardball in the same way, they should have done it, right? And if there were concessions that we made, they should have been made on the same day at the same time, arranged, prearranged, with the Troika making concessions. But what the Greeks did was make the concessions and hope the Troika would respond. No, you don't do that unless you know they will respond. And you don't do that unless you both respond with your concessions at the same time. Well, the Greeks haven't been doing this. They've been trusting the goodwill and hoping that the political figures would intercede on their behalf and soften up the Euro bankers and finance ministers. But that's not happened. That was a little bit naive on their part, I think, right? Fourth, Syriza hasn't anticipated how the Troika, as they approach the end of this period, would start maneuvering within Greece behind their back, right? No doubt, contacts between the Troika and the Greek central bank chairman, when he made his defection statement last week, going over to the side of the Troika. There's likely similar efforts to undermine the Syriza government going on at the political level in parliament, right? I'm sure talking to these other two parties, to the River Party and New Democracy Party, that's going on because they have a vested interest in having a re-election, another election. And as I said, that's ultimately plan B of the Troika itself. So fourth, they are not anticipating these internal maneuverings going on. Fifth error, right? Not realizing what the Troika really wants, and that is labor market reform. That is wage and pension cost reduction, tax increases on workers and so forth, because that's key to their internal devaluation. And, if that helps reduce, the currency, that raises the stock and bond markets as well, right? sixth error here, Syriza should not have let the Troika to demonize and discredit their own leaders at the bargaining table, Varoufakis, and this was done a couple months ago when the Troika attacked Varoufakis, and the response of Syriza and Tsipras was, okay, we'll sort of sideline him and bring others into play. Never, ever do that. Never let them determine who's going to sit down and negotiate with them, no matter what they say and no matter what their threats are. You never do that in bargaining. Your team is your team, and if they don't like it, well, they can go blow. That's very important. And once you start conceding, you give them a green light. Okay, well, if the next guy up here negotiating with us, we don't like him, he won't concede, and then we'll try to get rid of him too, So you can't play that game in negotiations, right? And not understanding that the Troika has a plan B here, and where is your plan B, Syriza? Not very clear. Maybe there is one, but I don't see one. But I see the Troika's plan B emerging in the last month. Push Greece to default and or accept all of their concessions and demands, plan A, right? In the meantime, we the Troika, have QE. We have a $1 trillion pot here that we can use to, if the markets roil a little bit when default happens, we can tame the markets, bail them out, make assurances. Right. So that the QE has emboldened them, which, by the way, was introduced last February as well, to play even harder nose. They think that they can contain any fallout contagion from all this because of this huge money pot that they've got. Right. I think, forcing new elections, ultimately, if possible, regime change. This is the, maybe the last option. I'm sure they don't want to get into that messy political area, but they probably will because, they have a lot at stake here. Not only their strategy for recovery, which is devaluation and cost base, right, but keeping the Eurozone together and keeping the EU together and not giving these emerging fringe parties more opportunity to grow their base, right? Not giving green lights to others like Britain and so forth to leave the Eurozone. Well, you might say, if they force them to Grexit, right, force Greece to exit the Eurozone, isn't that saying that they're okaying Britain to exit and others to exit the EU and so forth? No, because it will be so messy. They're going to make it so messy economically that it will strike fear in the populace of these other countries that what will happen to us, maybe something similar if we leave the EU or we leave the Eurozone. So you see there's a almost an incentive to push Greece to default, to push them into an exit. And by doing that, pushing them into an exit, make it so ugly economically that, it puts the fear in the rest of Europe and the Eurozone. Maybe we shouldn't think about leaving the Eurozone and the currency or even the EU itself. Maybe the cost is going to be too high, right? So that's plan B. There is no plan B that I can see on the side of the Greeks, right? What would it be? Well, as I said, if it were, a parallel currency is the key. In addition, laws to confiscate property of the wealthy if they move their money capital out of Greece, right? The whole idea of bail-ins, right? If you take and remove a certain amount of money, well, then, and if the banks fail, well, then you, the rich depositors, those with over $500,000, will essentially lose that $500,000 or what that is, and will convert that to a stock, the bank stock. That's called bail-ins. That's already been done in Cyprus, and it's been being prepared for elsewhere. But the rich will, if the banks fail, the rich will have to pay more for it. That failure than the rest, right? Capital controls, plans on capital controls, very important, right? Keep the money from flowing out. All this has to have been developed in parallel with initiating a currency, right? Incentives to keep euros in Greece, incentives to sell euros to the government in exchange for the new drachmas. You do this by saying, okay, all taxes in the future will be payable in the new drachmas instead of in euros. Well, then people are going to turn in their euros to get the new drachmas, right? That will drive up the value of the new drachmas and drive down the value of the euros. Okay, so then the government ends up with the euros that were in circulation in Greece, and it says to the troika, okay, well, we'll pay you in what euros we got left, but after that, all we will have are troikas, since you don't want to loan us anymore, not troikas, all we will have left is drachmas, and we'll pay you with drachmas, and if you don't want drachmas, then okay, we don't have anything else, you can't get blown out of a stone, right? Government representatives should be watching more closely what the Greek central bank and other Greek banks do. Workers should be notified that, if companies are trying to shut down and leave Greece, well, then you should take over those companies, and we, the government, will help you run them and maintain them. Okay. These are all the possibilities that could be, just speculating in a Greek plan B, which does not exist, even though a Troika plan B does exist. However, having said all that, I think nonetheless what we're going to see is an agreement here at the end, because what's happening very clearly is Greece is giving up, step by step, conceding. And I think that concession will probably continue over the weekend here. Most likely is going to be a solution where they extend it several more months, agrees to more concessions, and the troika releases some funds to pay for what's due in the meantime.